Summer's rocking up. It's time to get shredded. We all want to look better for summer. And I've brought in one of the big guns, Harriet Walker, accredited dietitian and sports dietitian, to talk about top 10 tips for weight loss, Harriet. And it's not 1200 calorie diets.
Greg, thanks for having me back. It's certainly not 1200 calorie diets. And I have 10 really useful and very effective tips to help drop that weight coming into summer.
Let's rip in.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by Hydroxyburn Shred Ultra Nootropic Thermogenic. Shred Ultra is scientifically engineered to shred body fat, ignite metabolism, and boost all-day energy while enhancing cognitive performance, focus, clarity, and mood. It combines powerful fat-burning thermogenics, Garcinia, green coffee bean, guarana, caffeine, and an industry-leading 4 grams of acetyl L-carnitine with potent nootropic ingredients at effective therapeutic doses to give you maximum results.
Welcome to Body Science HQ. This week, dietitian in the house, Harriet Walker. How are you, Harriet?
Hey, Greg. I'm very well. I've got a bit of helmet hair, but aside from that, I'm feeling pretty ready to podcast.
And it's summer's coming on, so do you guys get busy during summer? Like everyone wants to drop some weight, feel a bit better about summer?
Or? Spring, definitely. Although come Christmas, radio silence, Greg.
Yeah, radio
crickets,
silence.
Crickets, in fact. Well, people don't want to hear from their dietitians, you know, after about the 20th of November through till about January.
Really?
Yeah.
People are still training. What's going on?
They're training, which is fantastic. I just think, you know, a little bit of festivity happens.
It's the accountability side, isn't it?
It's the accountability. No yeah. one wants to hear my advice, no matter
but
how.
But then again, you know, if people eat up over that period, great for you next year.
Oh, no, it's great for their squat numbers. It's great for the deadlift numbers. Like, use it, guys.
Have fun, guys. Let's live. This is a quick one and we're not going to muck around. 10 tips for weight loss.
Yep, absolutely. So these are some really practical tips. Some of them might seem a bit obvious, but I would hazard to say that the obvious aren't always the ones that are being done, which is why they're on this list.
And you do have a list and you're very organized. So is number one more important than number 10?
It is not in any order.
Why did you not give that to the people, Harriet? Because I might go dietitian, who cares? I'm going to listen to three.
Well, if you take three away from this, you're going to be doing a pretty good job. So here's 10.
Okay.
However, if you want to choose three to work with, that's probably a very effective way to approach this.
So coming in at the unofficial number one.
Unofficial number one, rearrange your plate. So very commonly we see people with plates where the very energy dense foods, however healthy they may be, like your protein sources or your carb sources, are the dominant factors in the plate. However, if we can do some rejigging, you can still have some of your favorite foods. We just want to play around with the portion sizes, maybe make them a little bit smaller of those energy dense foods and fill up with the lower calorie, higher volume veggies in order to keep the volume. Your eyes are still seeing the same amount of food, feeling full, and we are consuming a little bit less calorie density in that meal. So rearranging your plate, I always start with half a plate of veggies, do about a fistful of protein, same with carb, pop some healthy fats on there. And that's a really easy basic template that if you're starting from scratch to follow and you can play around with it from there.
So if I'm a 100 kilo guy, am I doing the same thing?
Well, look, it's relative to your body size, so your hand size is not going to be about the same.
Because you were talking the averages there, weren't you? Like a
averages,
60
absolutely.
Kilo female, 75 kilo guy type.
So using the hand size is great because it does kind of scale up or down according to the size of the person. Obviously, if you're still super hungry or if you're quite active, you can rearrange that a little bit further. But really looking at your portion sizes is a great way of just assessing how we might be able to make some calorie changes without, you know, having to fully calorie count and filling up on those lower calorie options like vegetables, having a big glass of water before you have your meal.
There's a bit of conjecture about that. Is having water before you eat good or bad? Like I've heard some people say it's the worst thing you can do.
I haven't really seen anything definitive on that topic. What we do see is that people get an increased feeling of satiety. It doesn't have to be like, it's going to feel pretty uncomfortable if you're sculling half a litre of water right before your meal. Yep. But I find within the hour before, increasing your water intake is just a nice simple way of increasing that feeling of fullness. Yeah.
Yep. It's all about satiety, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
You've got fruits in there. Why are we eating fruit?
Fruits are a great source of fiber, great source of antioxidants, micronutrients, vitamins and minerals, and a little bit of sweet without it being a really direct source of like processed carbohydrates like sugar. So yes, fruit contains a small amount of naturally occurring sugar, but I have put the challenge out there for anyone to really binge on fruit because it's got that fiber, high water content. It's actually quite hard to, you know, scoff down a bunch of fruit, but you're still getting that nice bit of sweetness. So
Let's pick a couple of fruits we can eat in this low-calorie volume concept you're putting out that probably aren't going to throw the daily macros out too much.
Yeah, look, I mean, to be honest, most fruit falls under the sort of 100, 150 calorie, depending on the size of it. So for that reason, it makes it a really good snack. Berries are going to be, you know, if we're looking at a scale in terms of energy density, berries are going to be down the other end, you know, the lighter end of the scale. Higher fiber, raspberries are a fantastic one because they're so high fiber. They're really nutrient rich, so lots of antioxidants because of the bright red color and low sugar. Same with blueberries, slightly lower sugar.
Strawberries,
same again, high water content, really satiating, nice bit of sweet. But that said, look, fruit on the whole, again, it is a low energy food. Obviously, with everything, we don't want to be chowing down on 15 pieces a day. There's a laxative effect there as well. But they're a great little sweet snack, one or two pieces a day, happy days.
And you've got yogurt down. There's some good research around yogurt and weight loss, isn't there?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's an association with dairy consumption and actually having a lower weight. Controversial for the non-dairy folks out there. But generally speaking, there's, you know, it's a high protein source of food, good amount of calcium. Some of the high protein yogurts are a nice little addition to the diet without adding in a whole bunch of calories in there as well. So again, it comes down to that satiation, which is the feeling of fullness and wanting to stop eating. And that's the name of the game. So getting full on slightly less calories and like a low fat yogurt or even full fat yogurt is a good option.
And for our vegans out there, what's a yogurt alternative?
Well, I would be looking, I mean, there's a lot of yogurt alternatives out there. The comparison between, say, like a dairy yogurt versus a Koyo or a coconut yogurt, slightly different macronutrient profile. So I wouldn't necessarily put them side by side. Like a coconut yogurt's going to be a higher fat content and lighter on protein, like much less protein than a dairy yogurt. So it is kind of hard to find an equivalent. Soy yogurt is an option for people if they want to use that one. And there's the low lactose or no lactose yogurts available as well. So, and then there's almond yogurt again. Once, same, similar story with the coconut yogurt, a higher fat content, less protein in it. So, I mean, you can, you know, you can include those as a part of diet if your plant-based diet is what you're following. So you're getting that probiotic benefit there as well.
Yeah, nice. Coming in at number two, you're going to push protein intake.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, obviously, protein is, you know, not a silver bullet, but from my perspective, when I'm talking to people, it is definitely something that it gets overlooked in the first half of the day.
So it's a foundation macro for you?
Yeah, I start
with it. Such a thing as a foundation macro?
It is not, but let's put a little TM next to that.
Okay.
I definitely think that's worthwhile.
Not the dumbest thing I've ever said. But
No. I mean, by no means. Anyway, so protein intake, generally speaking, from what I see with my clients, is back-ended. So they're having a large chunk of protein in the latter half of the day, which is fine. They're probably meeting their protein intake that way. What I will get people to do is maybe have smaller chunks of protein and distribute it across the course of the day. We know when people...
Is there some hormonal benefits from that? Why are you getting people to do that?
Yeah, so there's protein sort of interacts with some of the hormones in the gut, which means that there's a greater feeling of fullness. We have a less drive to eat when we have that protein intake with a meal. And we know that people who have protein, you know, at a breakfast are less likely to consume as many calories across the course of the day. So it helps you feel full, helps you stay within your energy budget across the day. So it's a good one to sort of focus in on breakfast. So I would be using like a whey protein powder, like your Lean 5 in a smoothie first thing. Again, the yogurt options are there, eggs, whatnot. So trying to get in a nice, easy source of protein at breakfast is a really good way to keep that hunger under wraps.
So the first thing was drop the calories, like look at alternative foods.
Yeah, so drop your calories by rearranging the volume. So choose lower calorie foods.
And the second part is to try and decrease those hunger pangs you get, like those hormones saying, let's eat.
Yeah, it's, you know, working with your body,
set yourself up,
giving it what it needs to sort of reduce those hunger cues. Yeah.
So they're your first two tips. The third one, let's go.
So this, we've spoke on this quite quickly in number one. So increase your water intake across the day. Water obviously is good for our body. We're a large portion of body is water. But again, from that, the feeling of fullness, making sure that having, you know, 400 or 500 mils of water before each meal in the hour, obviously, like I said, not sculling it.
Is that your three big meals, or you've got people eating more than three meals?
I don't really go either way. It's personal preference with that one. Yep. But if they're having snacks, you might not. You can have a slightly smaller amount of water. But main meals in the hour before, we'll be looking at having that sort of 500 mils across that meal. And that tends to help them feel full going in. And again, those hunger cues aren't as pronounced coming into the meal.
You know, weight loss seems to be really heavily skewed towards satiety. Like, it seems to be one of the dominant forces when it comes to weight loss.
It's a really big factor. Yeah. It's a really big factor. Like, ignoring it, obviously, I could have three very small meals and make them very energy dense. Like, I could have a handful of nuts and a handful of, I don't know, high fat yogurt,
biscuits.
Yep. You can have those really energy dense foods, yeah. but they're not volumous. They don't
all the ones that taste good.
Fill your gut. Choosing the foods that are lower in calorie density, higher in volume, helps slow the rate of emptying of your gut, feel fuller for longer, less drive to eat. So I normally get people to assess their composition of their meal by saying, okay, if you're hungry within an hour of eating that meal, we probably need to take a look at re-engineering it a bit. So I think a meal should keep you feeling full, but, you know, for at least 3 hours, which, you know, it has a high fiber content. It's got some protein in there, some slow burning carbs and some healthy fats, which help slow the absorption of the food into the gut. That is a really effective way of assessing how good the composition of that meal is.
Yep. Okay. So do you just want to give for the people out there that don't get what a healthy fat is, a couple of examples of
healthy fats? Yeah, absolutely. So fats are a macronutrient. Yep. They are a slow burning source of energy. So right now I'm probably burning fat as energy. And healthy fats can help reduce inflammation. And I would include olive oil, nuts, seeds, avocado, oily fish as my top tips for a healthy fat.
So once again, satiety with the good fats is thing is going to slow down the absorption in the gut.
Yep, absolutely. And that makes you feel fuller for longer.
Yeah, nice. So what's your big number four? Top 10, we're in the number 4 out of 10.
Yep, absolutely. So number 4 is not nutrition related per se. We are increasing
You're not staying in your lane here? Like, what's going on?
I'm actually a qualified personal trainer.
Nice.
Craig.
I just want to get that out there.
Yep. So cert 3, cert 4. Got it. We're increasing our incidental exercise.
So what's incidental movement? What is that?
So you've got your planned exercise, which is your hour at the gym or your 45 minutes or whatever your poison is.
That 4% of your day.
That 4% of your day, which is a great way of staying fit and healthy and is also going to increase your energy expenditure in the day. Mm. However, equally as important and one which I think gets overlooked is incidental exercise, and that's the unplanned stuff. Yep. So the walking from your car to the office, walking to the bus stop, walking to the train, you know, picking up the kids from school, if you walk, obviously any kind of movements that
going
you do.
Going for a walk at lunch.
Yeah, it's not going to be your high heart rate stuff. Yep. It's not going to be your structured exercise, not lifting weights per se, but it's actually a pretty big energy burn when we look at energy expenditure across the day. I always set my, 10,000 steps is what they say is the goal. That's actually, there's been some recent research revised down to about 7,000 steps, and we're still having that.
Haters are going to hate, aren't they? Why would they drop it from 10 to 7? What are we achieving there?
Do you know what? Aspirational 10,000 steps. I don't think I would get 10,000 steps a day. I sit at an office.
Yeah, but you're a strong woman, that you'd get criticized if you're hitting your 10,000 steps.
If you're
steps
doing 10,000
day,
steps, that's fairly close to cardio, in which case I would be banished from the kingdom.
Yes.
But practically speaking, for our everyday folks, 7,000 I find is a really good target for me. It means I have to do a solid walk, like a 30-minute walk, and I'm only halfway. Yeah, so sitting in an office all day, I have to do a morning walk, plus make efforts to do some 5 or 10-minute walks across the day, walk to go get a coffee or something like that. It's a stretch
just
target for me, absolutely, but it's rarely will I get 10,000 steps unless I'm out of the office for the day. So if I'm, you know, cruising around Sydney, I'll definitely get my 10,000, but I work from home, so I have to be really diligent about getting that. But when you look at the difference of energy output on a day where I've hit my 7,000 steps plus training versus when I've just done training, it's probably the difference of about, you know, 200 or 300 calories.
Wow,
which,
okay. Yep,
you know,
nice.
You play that out across the day.
That's a snack. Is that 7 times a week?
Yeah, absolutely. Once you start doing the maths on the steps and the energy output, I know when I was a student, I went from waitressing, walking around, public transport to working in an office. And that was an easy 2 kilos of weight gain in the 12 months after I became a student. And that's really comes down to incidental exercise reduction. Okay. So it's a one that's quite easy for people to include, and it's not as painful as going to the gym. So it's a low entry point there. It's a easy bang for buck.
Nice. So halfway mark, number 5. I hope we're going to talk about something like caffeine.
Oh, Greg, you know me. I love caffeine.
Let's bring it on.
So number 5 is, caffeine is a nice way of pepping up your morning, and it also has a mild thermogenic effect, which means it increases our body's core temperature. You know, depending on the dose that you might have, you know, you might have one or two cups of coffee in the morning. That's going to give you a little bit of extra energy to do your incidental exercise. If you're having it before training, it's going to allow you to push a little bit harder during your training session as well. So a bit of an extra calorie burn there. But also just at rest, we're also, our core temperature is a little bit higher, which means we're expending more energy, and it can amount to around 90 to 100 calories, depending on how much you've had, pretty much for free per day. So we don't want to be consuming like excessive amounts of caffeine.
And what do you call excessive?
Look, I think the upper limits is somewhere in the vicinity of 250 milligrams to 300 milligrams.
You in a serve or over a day?
Over a day.
Oh, you're dreaming, aren't you?
What do you mean?
I mean, that's living in like a box.
What are you doing, Greg?
We'll be doing a little bit more than that.
A little bit more.
But let's be honest. I mean, most people out there are taking a pre-workout that's probably got anywhere from 200 to 300. Yeah. And that's starting their day.
And that, I mean, that would, for me, that those upper levels in one serving would be an ergogenic aid. So that would be your pre-trainer, which is going to be helping improve performance outputs. And then on top of that, sort of coffee. But we do have a U-shaped curve in terms of caffeine's benefits. You know, above a certain threshold, you know, we get that sort of increased, you know, jittery.
There is a good podcast by Macaron, caffeine, in our list of podcasts we've done. And he actually goes in some depth.
Yep, absolutely.
He talks about a lot of things. But
worth it. So, I mean, like I said, there's definitely some benefits to having caffeine, over which it probably starts becoming not as a positive effect. But I think for people who are trying to, you know, get some extra energy, get themselves through their day, try and drop a little bit of weight, they might find it beneficial just to know that that's going to be helping increase their core temperature and also sort of get them moving a little bit more with it, more energy.
Is there any satiety associated with caffeine?
I think there might be a bit of a satiating effect. I actually don't know off the top of my head, but I do remember reading something about an appetite suppression effect of caffeine, but I'd have to get back to you on that one.
Well, obviously, I love my caffeine. I had my shred this morning before my run.
How far did you go, Greg?
5.5Ks this morning.
Where are you going next year? What are you doing?
I'm going to do New York Marathon. You've made me say it again on
the podcast. It's on the podcast, everybody. You just heard that here.
I am going with a doctor, Dr. Hal Rice. I can't wait for you to come with me, mate, because I'm sure we'll catch up at some time during it.
Specialises in heart health, does he not?
Yes, he's a clever man. What's your big number six? We're talking about your top 10 tips for weight loss, dietitian, and you have come in number six with sleep.
Yes, absolutely. So, look, I would put this in my top three if we were putting these in order. Sleep is a big one. A, the more you sleep, the less opportunity there is to eat, which is, you know, an easy way.
I may have gone to bed in my life when I'm thought, gee, I'm hungry after dinner and I don't want to eat again.
I know when I'm doing a weight cut, if I can get my sleep up to 9 hours, happy days. It's a lot more manageable.
Do you think you sleep better? And we'll get into your sleep for your reasons for sleeping. Do you think you sleep better when your diet's right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I think, I'm not sure if there's any science to that. I know that I feel better, function better when I'm eating well. I have a feeling like there would be some interactions there in terms of quality of diet. But yeah, I think generally speaking, everything runs a bit more smoothly when we're eating well.
Because you look at what you said. You said increase your low-calorie volume foods like your veggies and your lean meats and keep it, you put the word low-fat on there. For us keto people out there, we think you're an idiot, but that's fine. Increase your protein intake at breakfast, you know, take on those potential hunger pangs happen during the day.
Yep.
Increase your water, get your incidental movement up as well as your structured exercise. So you should be gearing up for a good night's sleep.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't mean to call you an idiot like an idiot. I just meant, you know, if you don't get keto, that's your problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
No, so what we're working on here is, you know, obviously sleep is important for brain function, cognitive function. It's how we join the dots at nighttime. We mop up some cellular damage in our brain that can't be done during the day when we sleep. So from that perspective, willpower is always greater when we've had a good night's sleep. I know when I've only had, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours for whatever reason, my willpower and my ability to say no to the croissant is diminished.
You're a croissant person, eh?
Oh, look, very occasionally.
Yeah, okay.
I like to think I'm French. Might have a latte and a croissant.
Ah, nice.
It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. But the other thing with sleep is when we don't have enough sleep, we get an increase in the hormone that is associated with hunger, which is ghrelin. So we've got the two hormones.
Ghrelin.
I know. The hungry hippo hormone, I like to call it. And then we've got leptin, which is the opposing hormone, which is the hormone that is associated with satiety, with that that feeling of fullness. So research has indicated that when we have reduced sleep, we have an increase in the hunger hormone. You know, we might be searching for some more energy to make us feel
alive.
That becomes prominent. The more you have disrupted sleep, likely the more hungry you're going to be. And it's noticeable. I think anybody who's had a night of poor sleep, carbohydrate cravings go up, the intake goes up because we have that, also because we have that lack of willpower as well.
Yeah, okay. Any foods we should dodge at night to affect our sleep?
It really depends on your activity levels across the day. There's foods, you know, which are rich in tryptophan, which can be quite good. So
tell us what it is.
Milk, those sorts of things.
What was the first one?
Turkey is quite high in tryptophan.
Okay.
Gobble, gobble. I think milk is a source of tryptophan. I can't think of any the rest of them off the top of my head, but that's a precursor to the hormone melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. Sometimes people find when they go low carb, they can affect their sleep.
Yeah.
There's an interaction there. But then again, obviously having a big, large meal before you're going to bed, it sits heavy in your stomach. You know, digestion is not going to be as great. It's not a matter of, you know, saying no carbs after here. That's kind of been disproven somewhat. If you're active at night, it's okay to have a little bit of carbohydrate. It's not going to kill you. If you're less active at night, obviously our body's ability to process carbohydrates, is, you know, especially for like shift workers and whatnot, I would be cutting back on the carbohydrates across the night. But yeah, so there's a couple of factors into that one, but I'd be, you know, giving your body a couple of hours to digest before bedtime.
Well, since you've jumped from sleep to some carb activity, I'm going to bring up the number 7.
Yes.
Carbs.
Carbs. So absolutely.
Top 10 tips for weight loss. Number 7, choose slower burning carbs.
Yeah. So this is really looking at the quality of the food that you're consuming, and carbohydrates are definitely something that, you know, can be included in a healthy diet, but I think there is a lot of access to highly refined carbohydrates. So
do you want to give us a little input as to what they might be for the people out there that don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got naturally occurring sugars. So we were talking about fruit that has a naturally occurring fructose, milk, dairy has a naturally occurring lactose. Anything with os on the end is a sugar. They're not what we're really worried about. We are more concerned with reducing the amount of added sugar, refined sugar. When I say refined, I mean, just say I take a kernel of wheat and I pull the bran away, which is the fibrous part, take away the healthy fats, which are in wheat. And what I'm left with is the starch. The starch is rich in carbohydrate, but it doesn't actually have all that much nutrition. We've ground that down into a flour. It's bleached, even less nutrition. And what we, you know, what results from that is the foods that are really energy dense, like white breads and, you know, baked goods that are giving you lots of calories for not much nutrition. So refined means
and you would
processed.
Call them fast burning carbs?
In most cases, they're going to be more likely to increase your blood glucose levels quickly, and there's generally a corresponding low with that, and that can be associated with increased hunger, decreased feelings of satiety. So when we're choosing carbohydrates that are higher in fiber, obviously with more nutrients in there, health outcomes are going to be better, and over the course of the day, blood sugar levels are going to be a bit more even, and we're less likely to be sort of, you know, searching for those, the next kind of hit, really, of, you know, another refined carbohydrate. But, you know, another aspect of sugar, sort of the refined added sugar, is it's delicious.
Yeah.
It's generally combined with something which is high in fat, and that combination of refined sugar and fat, I'm thinking donuts. Look, I'm only donuts. Human. Yeah. They are delicious, and I can't stop at one. You know, I try and eat 5 apples, I get through one, I'm like, nah, I'm actually done. There's fiber content, there's a little bit of sugar.
But you can
in
do
there.
5 donuts.
High
if
water. I could definitely smack down 5 warm cinnamon donuts.
Yeah, okay. And so the idea here over the day, it's once again, I think it falls into satiety again. Choose slower burning carbs and feel more satisfied.
Absolutely.
Keep the balance.
I think satiety is the word of the podcast.
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, what's your big number 8?
Number 8, get professional help if you have zero clue. So it is very easy to follow the new trend of the week, and it kind of is trend of the week at this stage. If you're working with somebody who can help put those recommendations in context for you, it will make a whole lot more sense, and you will save yourself a lot of time guessing, applying things that aren't necessarily relevant to you. With nutrition information, there's probably a spot for a lot of different approaches.
Yep.
So, you know, I look at it as a toolbox. So ketogenic diets are a tool. Intermittent fasting is a tool. Low carb is a tool. High carb is a tool. Greg is a tool.
Yep. Nice.
jokes.
Get one back. I did call you an idiot earlier and I'm still feeling bad about that because you're definitely not an idiot.
Boom, boom. Gotcha. No, we're even now. But basically, they're all tools that we can use for the right person in the right scenario. They might actually be really effective and really useful. But a health professional, a registered health professional, like a dietitian, is going to be able to explain to you why, how, when to use it, when not to use it, and give you that context around it. I find people like, oh, I'm doing a bit of this and I'm doing a bit of that. And we're dabbling in a few different things. We generally don't get anywhere quickly.
Yep.
If we can get somebody who can be like, all right, yeah, I reckon you might be a candidate who might find something like intermittent fasting useful because they might travel or they're very, you know, they don't feel hungry until
whatever it is,
X hour in the day. So, you know, I think there's a place for a lot of different approaches. It's about finding the right recipe for the person who's sitting in front of you, and having somebody explain the context around the recommendations takes a lot of the confusion out of nutrition and means you can become sort of better at reading the information that's put out there. Because a lot of the time it might be useful, but if it's not the right information for you, it can become confusing.
And Harriet, where does someone find a registered dietitian?
There's heaps of us, but I would look on the DAA website, so Dietitians Association of Australia.
If I just type that into Google, it'll come up.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. And then if you want the most awesome variety of dietitian, I'd be looking at a sports dietitian. So you can look up Sports Dietitian of Australia. If you're looking at improving your sports performance, increasingly muscle mass, body composition, they're the brand that you're looking for.
And just off the top of the head, what's it cost to go to a dietitian?
Look, it can range. The best thing about seeing a registered health professional is that in many cases, you'll be able to get rebates. So if you go to your doctor and you get a referral, you should be able to get...
So a doctor will refer you to a dietitian?
Yep, they can do. If there's a condition that, you know, requires specific treatment, dietary intervention, then you can get rebates via Medicare.
What if I just want to lose weight? Can I see a doctor so I want to lose weight and he'll put...
If you just want to lose weight and you go to an accredited dietitian or sports dietitian and you have private health, in many cases, you can get a rebate back there. Look, it'll anywhere between 100 upwards from that, depending. Obviously, you're paying for quality and experience. So, you know, it might seem like a bit of an output.
Oh, it's not really. It's not a lot more than a PT, is it?
Absolutely not. No. So. And it's like going to a physio. It's a very similar sort of pricing structure to a physio.
I think a lot of people wouldn't even consider going to a dietitian.
Look, I don't think it's the first place they look for information, unfortunately, but it can save you a lot of confusion. It can save you a lot of trial and error, and which in essence is time, and also paying for, you know, this and that without getting recommendations. And the same with supplements. You know, supplements can be really effective when they're structured in the way they're supposed to be used. And, you know, it's just making sure that you're, you know, getting the most out of the interventions that you're trying to use.
Yeah, nice. So if you're looking to drop those kilos, you want to do it the smart way, stay accountable. There's a lot of accountability with working with a dietitian.
Absolutely, there is.
Get on board. Harriet, how do people find you if they want to talk to you?
So I would first look at my fantastic and influential Instagram account, which is @athleticeating. I also have athleticeating.com.au, which is my website, and people can book online there.
Yeah, nice. Get on board.
Yep.
Let's throw out to a couple of other dietitians that we love. Who we got?
My favourites, Angie Clark in Brisbane, Eye Nutrition, Chloe, and Jess at Health Performance Collective.
Jess Spendy-Lab, one of our favourites.
Yep, Spendy. Yep. Robbie Clark in Sydney as well. Yep. Yeah, I've got a couple of really great people that I get to work with.
And you all talk together too, like you're all keep up to date.
Yeah, there's always room at the top, Greg. And the best part is those are the people on my speed dial. So if I don't know anything, I'm very quick to ask them a couple of questions or refer on if it's something that they're sort of better at, you know, handling, and vice versa. It's a two-way street there. So there's some really great, I mean, I obviously hang out with the sports dietitians of the world, but yeah, there's some really great people doing great work out there.
And like, I know we're in the top 10 tips for weight loss, and obviously people are training and into exercise. Why are people going to a sports dietitian for weight loss?
I think the focus is on not necessarily weight. I think body composition is a really critical part of understanding how the process works. So obviously I think people, if they've tried before, they can understand their weight can fluctuate 1 or 2 kilos in a day, which is not actually indicating the true change in their body composition, which is fat mass versus muscle mass.
Good point.
So I think a sports dietitian, A, will be teaching you how to fuel for performance as opposed to just looking at weight loss per se. I think that's a really positive way of framing, you know, food is how does it fuel your body to perform optimally as opposed to just getting by. And also that focus on actually how do we grow some lean muscle mass, which improves your metabolic rate? How can we drop a bit of fat mass whilst, you know, amplifying our training and keeping it really focused on that, you know, getting fitter, faster, stronger.
Yeah, nice. What's your big number nine?
High intensity training. So
high intensity training.
Yeah.
What is a dietitian's definition of high intensity training?
We're looking at, you know, this is a high intensity interval training. So we want to be getting our heart rate up, bringing it back down again, getting it up again. And it just means that we can work out for a shorter amount of time, really getting that heart rate up there. We're pushing, we're stressing the body. So that bit of
positive
stress.
So where are we trying to get our heart rate up to? Because I do a lot of functional HIIT style training with my peeps.
Yep.
And sometimes I look at my watch and go, yeah, Greg, you probably didn't kick some goals there.
Yeah. So I would look at, we're looking at a percentage.
So what zone you want me in for this? When we're talking weight loss tips, well, most people got a watch.
Your 220 minus your age is your max. As a general rule of thumb, there's a couple of different ways you can figure
max.
That out. That's your max heart rate.
So where do you want me in your definition of high intensity training?
Yeah, 75, 80.
75% of max heart rate?
Yeah, look, I would be referring out to a couple of the trainers in my life. So your Kev Turner
would
be a
great
person. Put
your personal trainer. Look, you've got your Cert 4 in fitness. We're happy to hear it. What are you thinking?
Look, obviously we're going to be working
at
higher end.
Well, you know Kev's at the higher end. We don't have to talk about that. We know where he sits.
But basically you shouldn't be able to hold a conversation whilst you're doing it.
Yep.
You should be sort of thinking about why you actually came that morning, and that would be a good sign to me that you're working at a high intensity. Generally when we're working at that 60% of our max, and we should be able to hold like a light conversation, and as we move up from there, when working at high intensity intervals, you're not working there for a long period of time. You're working in there for sort of, you know, 20, 30 seconds and bringing your heart rate back down. But what that's really stressing our body. It's a positive stressor. It triggers those adaptations, you know, increasing, you know, cardiovascular fitness, upregulating the cellular machinery and increasing that lean muscle mass. So I find the high intensity interval training is more bang for buck, especially if you're time poor, as opposed to, you know, going for a leisurely sort of 5K run, which, hey, has its place. Any activity is good, but in terms of calorie burn, the high intensity interval training is fantastic. If you're time poor, I would be going for weights training as well if you've got a little bit more time up your sleeve, increasing that lean muscle mass. But you can do a HIIT with weights as well. So
a couple of HIIT sessions, a couple of lifting some tin.
Yep, lifting some tin.
Definitely getting our incidental movement up.
Yep.
And getting out for a couple of walks.
Yep, absolutely. So I think, you know, increasing your planned exercise is always an efficient way of, you know, improving body composition, but also complementing that with incidental exercise, the day-to-day getting up out of your seat, sitting down, because it actually contributes quite a bit to your daily energy expenditure. And at the end of the day, it's about increasing your energy expenditure, reducing that energy intake just a wee bit in a way that's sustainable. And that's how we get that weight loss that's sustainable and sort of a positive addition to your life, as opposed to being something that's overly restrictive and something you can't stick to.
Okay, what's number 10 in our top 10 tips for weight loss?
Look, I had to say it, and it's not the most popular thing, but it is.
This is why we don't like dietitians. You know how here it comes.
I like a glass of rosé.
You do?
As much as the next person. However,
why do you drink rosé? Let's tell the people.
I'm just going through a phase, Greg.
Oh, I mean, it's a phase thing. It's not a face.
Oh no, no,
not
it's
a calorie.
Definitely not a calorie thing. Yeah. Although, I mean, you know, your wine does have a slightly lower calorie intake. I don't actually take that into account. If I'm going to drink alcohol, I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going through a very big rosé phase of my life. However, look, one or two glasses of alcohol a week is not a problem. It is the drinking in excess, which a lot of people are guilty of.
What is the definition of drinking in excess? Is there a definition?
There is a definition. It might be more than three or two or three in a sitting. It becomes binge drinking after that time.
So if I drink 21 beers in one night, that's bad. But if I drink seven lots of three, I'm okay.
Oh, I would also say it has to be the number of alcohol-free days in the week. There has to be.
We shouldn't even be going there. Like, seriously, reduce your alcohol. That's what
reduce
it's about.
Your alcohol. Yeah, we're talking don't about try weight loss. And bend the rules, Greg.
I
we
know,
want a few.
You know, it's Christmas is coming.
One or two
and it's
nights a week, having one or two drinks.
So some
is
people,
fine.
It's not Christmas. It's end of year festivities.
But what happens is, I mean, it's the alcohol content, the mixer that you're having with the alcohol. That you know, two separate contributors to excess calories, and then you've got the food that goes with
what
it.
What if I'm doing vodka and Coke Zero?
Look, you can probably have a little bit more of those without increasing your calorie intake. However,
it's going to make poor decisions later in the night.
That's
though.
Exactly yeah. it. Once we start consuming those large amounts, yes, you can have more, but I would also dare say that
pizza.
The hangover the next day is going to be fairly rotten. What happens when we want hangovers? We want the carbs. We want those greasy foods. And that makes it.
While I've got you, and this is a $1 million question, I know we're doing top 10 tips for weight loss, but let's just say I am at an end of year party and I do have a few drinks, a few more than I probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple more. Next day, I got a hangover. And obviously, bad choice world. What should I take from a dietitian's perspective to go, this is the best things I should eat the next day with a hangover? And I look for two things. I want to get through my hangover and I don't really want to spoil my diet because I've already spoiled it the day before.
First thing I'm looking at is hydration.
Hydration.
You know, one part of a hangover is a little bit of dehydration. We do know alcohol inhibits the antidiuretic hormone, which makes you pee. So we are probably expelling more water than usual, probably a little bit dehydrated, a bit dry in the mouth. So if we were alternating our drinks with a glass of water, this wouldn't be a problem.
That's a good tip though. Like if you're going to functions and parties, have a glass, every second one, a glass of water.
Absolutely.
Be that person.
But
I actually do drink water between sessions.
Yeah, look, it makes the next day much easier. Yeah. So I'd be starting with some water. The other part of a hangover can sometimes be low blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. So we tend to go for the carby foods. I don't know if there's an actual recommendation for the foods that are going to make you feel better.
You mean no one's researched that?
Oh, no, there probably has been. But look, I can give you all the recommendations in the world and this is what you should be doing. But tell me, when you're in that state, are you actually going to be thinking about your diet? Dietitian's recommendations? Probably not. Look, if you can choose some, you know, whole grain carbohydrates, Greg.
Yep.
Are you going to have a bowl of oats with some fruit? Probably not.
But you know what? You have the you dig into the Maccas and you go find a pie and you do all that, but you feel like shit after it. Like it's not
a,
doing
it's
the job.
It's a vicious circle. Yeah. It is a vicious circle. Start with your hydration. Get some electrolytes in there. Get your, you know, hydration status back on track. I don't know. If you could have some eggs and toast, you know, a bit of protein, healthy fats, a bit of carbs in there, you can probably cut out a lot of excess calories if you make it at home. But I would dare say if it's gotten to that point, we're in survival mode. Vegemite toast for people is very popular. Some B vitamins in there. Definitely, they're associated with metabolism of alcohol. So B vitamins, that's why you've got your Barocca, apparently. But yeah, so look, I think obviously if you can make it made at home, that would probably save some calories. But if you've gotten to that point, I think I would be overlooking my life choices first. Every now and then it's going to happen and that's fine. It was a good time. Hopefully it was worth it. But if it's happening every weekend and it's derailing your goals, then
that's a big thing, isn't it?
That's a big thing. Yeah.
Once in a while,
we're not
who cares?
Talking about the once-offs or the special occasions or whatnot. We're talking if it's happening every weekend, every second weekend, and it's getting in the way of your ability to get to the gym, get active. If you're writing off a couple of days of your week, then your results are going to be heavily impacted by that.
I'm a massive multivitamin, drink a lot of water before I go to bed guy.
Yep, absolutely.
Look, there's been some conjecture in the marketplace about caffeine at night with a hangover. That's a bad idea, isn't it?
That is very contrary to its indication. So caffeine inhibits adenosine, which is a chemical associated with sleep. Having caffeine, it's got a half-life of about 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah, so
if you're having
you
caffeine any time after, you know, especially if you're sensitive to caffeine, you wouldn't be having caffeine at nighttime at all. Some people can have a cup of coffee and go to bed, but no one's going to be having a large dose of caffeine at night time and, you know, being able to sleep. And sleep is a big part of being able to, you know, sleep off the effects of alcohol as well.
Nice. Look, that's your top 10 tips. Let's rip through them really quickly.
So we want to increase the volume of our low-calorie foods, vegetables, water, lean meats, you know, yogurts, whatnot. So we're rearranging the portions of on our plate, which is number one.
Yeah, good tip.
Two, increase protein intake, especially at breakfast.
So get in early.
Yep, increase that satiety factor early in the day.
Think water.
500 mils or so in the hour leading into your main meals can help make you feel full. Increase your incidental movement. So get
That's
outside,
a good one, that one.
Stick a timer on your phone. Or block out your camera.
Stand up now.
Yep, stand up. We can do the next podcast standing up.
Yeah, you're better than doing it with this helmet I've got on.
A little bit of caffeine intake can help increase the thermic.
Oh, I love my shred. Don't a little bit. Let's go full scoop, guys.
Clean coffee is my choice. Sleep more.
I love our clean coffee.
It's good, so product. Delicious. Yeah. Put that with a bit of Grey Goose. How's that?
May have had a martini or two night on that. Yes, but it's more for during the day because it's not good for you at night.
Absolutely. So
sleep, which is heading into sleep.
Less time to eat increases the satiety hormone and decreases our hunger hormone, choose slower burning carbs, carbs.
And that's all day, not just at night you're talking there.
That is all day, every day. Get professional help. So help navigate the jungle that is nutrition. Can be very easy if you ask the right people. Increase high intensity training, get your intervals in and reduce your alcohol intake. And look, if everybody did this, there would be zero issues.
Yeah, that's good. There's some good
choose 10 one or two
good,
of those. Go through the list. If there's a few of them that you're not doing, choose them to focus on.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Well, Harriet, thanks for coming on board. Everybody enjoying their summer. We'll get into this top 10 tips for weight loss. Let's get the beach gear on and have fun.
Rock and roll.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.